abject, distressing, you know, very, very upsetting. And in fact, they're extraordinary because they're not. They're incredibly dignified.
He's trying to hold it together for his mother.
Yeah, he's just trying to protect his mother because he thinks increasingly, I'm definitely going to die. This is the last thing she'll see of me. And I want to say some decent things about, you know, apologize for, you know, stuff I've done, and like we all would, really. And he wants to try and hold it together for his mom. And that was incredibly moving because it wasn't, you know, abject. And in fact, he said, in fact, that when if he did, you know, as he left the messages, and he tended to leave them every 24 hours, if he did kind of lose it a bit, he would go back over them and erase them and replace them with something a bit more dignified. And that gave us the idea of doing the talk show host. That in some sense, he was performing a little bit, you know, to try and keep his spirits up, to keep other people's spirits up, you know, that kind of thing. So that led to that, which is the only one that isn't a verbatim message, you know, we invented a little bit there, and pushed the envelope a little bit. But the main thing was James actually looking at it, because James said afterwards it was extraordinary, too, because everybody who tells the story, including us now, knows the ending. Everybody who hears the story, when we first heard the story, it had an ending, he got out. But there's this guy with his little video camera leaving a message, and he increasingly thinks he's going to die, and he runs out of water. And when the jump, because of course he doesn't move in the screen, the camera just switches on and off, and 24 hours pass. The 24 hours that pass when he has no water at all, it's really scary. It's not like carbohydrate loss, like dieting or anything like that. It's really weird. And you've got to be very, very careful not to mess with weight loss through water. Because your internal organs can go at any time. And he complained about that he could feel, he thought he was about 15 minutes from a heart attack by the end. Because he could feel his organ, and that's why James does all this all the time, massaging his chest like this. He could feel, it must have been an extraordinary experience for him. So yeah, that was, the messages were a big thing for us to, a big access point, and he was incredibly generous. And his mum was, of course, because he had to clear it with his mum. We would see them and that we would be allowed to not use them directly, but use them as inspiration. Yeah.
But it was a very important endpoint to the story, because you are watching somebody experience something that we will all experience one day, yeah? And facing that with incredible fortitude. And he's not a perfect guy, Aaron, he'd be the first to admit, but he confronted that moment in his existence with incredible dignity and fortitude, I think.
But those tapes allow you a way in. They give you a narrative. I mean, you don't have to invent something. We were talking about this earlier. If those tapes hadn't existed, suddenly you have a volleyball with a face on it. I mean, there is something that you have to, there's something he has to talk to, and you were very fortunate in that. And it's amazing because you're a filmmaker making a film about a guy who made a film about what he thought were the last hours of his life. Is that in some sense what drew you to it? Because I'm not sure you knew those tapes existed when you, in 2006.
Well, no, you know from the book.
Right, in the book. When you read the book, you didn't...
I didn't imagine I would see the tapes, yeah. No. But I remember thinking at one point, well, maybe we'll intercut bits of the real story, you know, bits of the real tape with him, even though it's a different actor and things like that. Right. But we really wanted to do it with an actor as an immersive experience. So the experience would happen to James Franco, in effect. Because I love that in the cinema, that we suspend the fact it's somebody else and you just live it with Franco for... And you know he's playing someone else, you know Franco's going to live, but you can't get... I've done that, you know, you get tense and think, oh my God, is he going to get through? What's he going to do? All that kind of stuff. I love that in cinema. It's why we come here, I think, you know, to these mad places with all these other strangers, and the lights go down and we lose ourselves in that experience. I love that about cinema.
Well, it's amazing. We know he's not drinking piss, but at the same time, we know he's not cutting off his arm.
Well, you don't know.
How do you know that?
Well, with Franco, you don't know that. You're right. With James Franco, he could well be drinking.
He told you that.
Well, I thought what was remarkable is that more people were oohing and aahing and covering their eyes when he was drinking the water at the end in the canyon than he was when he was cutting his arm. I think that was remarkable. Where people will cringe and duck down at it. Fairly amazing.
Well, listen, I think one of the things watching it with audiences, I mean, that, you know, some people have an extreme empathetic reaction, as we call it, but most other people, I think, if he can do it, you can watch it. And by that point in the story, you know, we should be invested enough in his experience and empathizing enough to be able to watch him do what he has to do to
to well, we want him to do it. Yeah. We're desperate for him to cut his arm off at that point. We want to get out of that canyon as much as he does at that point.
You know, look, if you didn't feel that, then the movie wouldn't work. So.
Well, let's talk about that. I want to talk about the artistry of the film. There's the sequence when he falls. If I'm not mistaken, you let that go for a very long time when James falls into the canyon. That initial sequence, and when he's initially stuck. You had two cinematographers working on this. I want to talk a little bit about why you felt that necessary at the beginning of the film when you talked at the introduction. You said you shot this over the course of a few weeks, 8 weeks in the canyon, 7 days a week. You needed to be immediate, you needed it to be visceral, and you also shot it in sequence, which obviously was incredibly important for you to do as well. So talk about all of that and what the experience of making this film was like for you as well, for the both of you.
I wanted it to be, the idea of it, and this is what I said to Aaron originally, was I always saw it that you must never be released from that canyon until he's released. And that we would, the way that we would set the agenda for the actor, for James, and for ourselves, was that the canyon, although we would shoot, we shot in the real canyon for about a week, and then we repeated exactly that canyon in a warehouse in Salt Lake City. But normally when you build a set in a place, you make it movable so that you can get in and out of it. But we didn't do that. We made it solid so that they had no more freedom than if we'd been filming in the real place. And that dictated the style of the film visually, and because there was only room for James and a cameraman in there. And they would switch every few days, a different cameraman, and so that we could keep filming 7 days a week. Because I thought, you know, given what Aaron goes through, we've got to compress and press the people who make this film so it doesn't become leisurely, you know, so it doesn't become reflective. It just should be intense for us to make it, you know. And then we'll all get released. We get released at the end. You get released, you know. And the euphoria you feel, and he calls it, Aaron called it an ecstasy when he got released. And we wanted that to be really deeply felt, and not just amongst ourselves, but for the audience as well. We wanted people to feel that journey of him. And because we're never going to, hopefully, we're never going to be in that kind of circumstance that he's in, but we all face different things, you know? And that's why his story is an inspiration. We all have tough decisions to make sometimes, and there's bad times of your life, and you can get through. And who helps you through? Of course, it's that connection with other people in some way will actually pull you through it. You know, get you through somehow, and your own courage as well. So that was we wanted to repeat the experience for ourselves as much as for the audience eventually.
What do the two cinematographers bring to it? Because they're two very different kinds of guys. I mean, did they have an impact on Franco's performance and what? I assume you brought them in because you wanted them to bring something to James as well, and to bring something to that set in that moment and that feeling. Right?
Well, Danny has a story about the best laid plans, that the idea was that they were going to be contrasting personalities and interact differently with James. And that didn't really happen. Everybody, they both loved James, he loved both of them, but it not just in that two-unit approach to shooting it, but also in how the script was written, in how it was cut. There was a constant search in terms of our process for variation and dynamism, because it's a story which is inherently and conceptually, if you like, static. I mean, I'm guessing a lot of you guys, when told what this movie was about before you came to see it this evening, thought, well, how are they going to do that? That could be really boring. That was indeed my first response when Danny sent me the book. It was like, this is a great book. It's not a movie. How do you do this as a movie? And he'd written a treatment that began to elaborate some of these techniques by which we would find a grammar.
Well, let's talk about that.
To make it work.
What was in the treatment that sold you on it, and how did you translate what had been established?
Well, it was perverse, in as much as Aaron's